Our gallery, please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, Reverend Gock, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
The 69th Psalm we hear, "You who seek God, let your hearts revive." Gracious God, we gather once again to complete the work required of us. We ask that our discussions and inquiries with one another bring clarification and help us make good decisions. And we pray that we will do all that is necessary to finish the work before us in good order. And Lord, watch our travel and keep us mindful of our responsibilities to others we share the road. Bring us safely home to use our time away for health and recreation and intimacy with our loved ones and with you, our God. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Call the roll.
Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Kevany, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Pergeson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright Jones.
A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal of the first day, June 24, 2010.
Journal of the Senate, 95th General Assembly, first extra session of the second regular session.
Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with, the say be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion that that motion dispensing with the reading of the first of four journals we have to read today, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading of the first of the four journals is dispensed with. Read the journal of the second day, Friday, June 25th.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, first extra session, second day, Friday, June 25th.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal to be dispensed with, the same being approved as though having been full read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Read the journal of the third day, Tuesday, June 29th.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, first extra session, third day, Tuesday, June 29th, 2010.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal be dispensed with, the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Read the journal for the fourth day, Wednesday, June 30th.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, first extra session, fourth day, Wednesday, June 30th, 2010.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal be dispensed with, the say be approved, though having been fully read.
You have heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis.
I would like to put in record that Kermit Miller of KRCG-TV, Alan Ball of KMBC-TV, Mike Mahoney of KMBC-TV, Brad Johnson of ABC-17 News, and Chelsea Mousa of KOMU-TV be given permission to take photographic images.
Mr. Duly President. Noted, Senator.
Could we go to the order of business of resolutions?
Resolutions. Senator from Boone.
I have a resolution.
Send your resolution forward.
I asked it to be printed in the journal, and I would like to briefly explain it.
Shall be printed in the journal. Proceed.
Mr. President, this is a resolution. Obviously, we're here under the scope of the call that was issued by the governor. One thing we've had extensive discussion on is the issue of data centers. And for all the reasons that we've been discussing, data centers are, frankly, of a more timely, important matter than the Ford deal itself. We've got two major data center projects, each worth over $1.5 billion, that are poised to come to Missouri and make a decision in the next month. So this is an issue that we need to deal with now. The resolution urges the governor to please expand the scope of the call so that we don't run into a constitutional issue on data centers, so that we could expand what we're discussing here on economic incentives to include data centers. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Buchanan.
Would you please refer that resolution to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics?
It is so referred, Senator. For what purpose does the Senator from Cole arise?
Mr. President, I request unanimous consent for two introductions, please.
Hearing no objection, please proceed with your special introduction.
Introduction number one, Mr. President, would you like to know that Madam Secretary Terry Spieler, a constituent of the 6th District, has recently been named the Secretary Treasurer of the American Society of Legislative Clerks and Secretaries for the United States?
I would be delighted to learn that.
Thank you, Mr. President. And the second introduction, on my left, joining us today, Army Ranger Specialist Jake Vogel, and on August 2nd, it will be veteran Jake Vogel, who will complete a 4.5-year commitment to the United States Army, which included 4 tours of duty, 2 in Iraq and 2 in Afghanistan. So I'd like to make Jake feel welcome.
Senator, may the chair inquire of you.
Please.
Senator, I know you're bursting with pride with this young man and all he's done. How many tours in all in those four tours in 2 different combat zones?
Short term, only 120 days at a time because of what he does. But that pride is short-lived because, as we speak, he's unemployed, living in my basement.
Senator, there's certain things you could have left unsaid.
Oh, shoot.
Let's see. Senator from St. Francis,
Thank you, Mr. President. Can you top that? No, I can't. Mr. President, would you go to the order of business of reports from standing committees? I think the Senator from Howell has a report.
Reports of standing committees? I do not see the Senator from Howell with us. The Senator from Howell?
He probably has left the building.
Senator from Howell.
Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight has a report.
Send your report forward, Senator. Read the committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1 with Senate Committee Substitute, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Pergerson, Chairman.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, could you go to the order of business on the formal calendar of House bills for third reading?
House bills for third reading, the formal calendar.
I think there's only one there.
I believe there is. Terry, what is it? Senator from Cape Girardeau is on his feet.
Mr. President, I move that House Bill 1 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute to House Bill, to House Bill Number 1. Mr. President, for the benefit of the body, this is the pension reform legislation. The House passed its version of pension reform, and what we are doing with the Senate Committee Substitute is we are taking the bill back to the version of pension reform that this chamber twice passed during the regular session. We made one change for the benefit of the body in our discussions with Don Huber of the Senate staff. We found an area that we wanted to wordsmith just a little bit so that we could make sure, absolutely sure, that we were only doing this on a prospective basis for new hires on or after January 1, 2011. That is the only change that we have made from the legislation that twice passed this chamber. Where we're at, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Does any senator wish to be heard?
Mr. President.
Senator from 13th.
I would like to inquire the senator from Cape.
Does the senator yield?
I yield.
Proceed.
I don't want to get in a tussle here, but I do want to make note, your word reform is sure different from my word reduction. So in your testimony, you said this is a pension reform bill, and actually you're dealing with Mosier's. You and I both sit on that board, and when you say reform, it's like something bad has happened in the pension retirement system, and we are an 85% vested. Am I correct there?
I think it's close to that number. It depends on what snapshot you take, but I think that's the best.
We are an 85% funded pension system. We are nothing like the state of Illinois that is practically borrowing money, which has dropped their bond rating, I think, to a double B because they keep taking out loans to pay into their pension systems. Similar, I think California has issues with their pension systems. So when we say reform, Mosier's, the retirement system for the state employees, is run very effectively and functions quite well. The issue being is to try to save money in the future. At trying times like this, you have to come up with ideas. So the idea is there will be a 4% contribution by future state employees. Could you tell me the fiscal impact on that
as it relates.
I haven't seen the fiscal note.
Right, and we're generating all of those fiscal notes as we speak. We're moving pretty quickly at this point. If I can get the attention of Rhonda over there on our joint committee, that would be able to break down into each category the fiscal savings of each and every benefit change.
One of the questions I had a week ago, and I have since been able to be educated on where the savings was, is this pension bill will only take effect on new hires. Now, if the state has reduced its workforce, and then you stated last week that even those people that have been reduced or laid off, if they come back to work, since they are already in the system, they still go under the old plan and not that 4%. So my question originally was, is how are we getting to this savings? Because all current employees and those that were laid off to come back are not being affected. So I inquired, and the reason there is a savings is I have been given information that in the last year there have been like 4,600 terminations or layoffs, but 3,600 new hires.
Right.
And that's because when people do go retire, you still have to replace them, just like the prison guards. So the assumption in this fiscal note and the savings is on, I take it, the close to 4,000 new hires in the last year, that when this kicks in January of 2011, that they are, I'm asking, they are estimating that there's going to be 4,000 new hires.
The way that we do all fiscal notes, the way that we budget here, is we look at the past and try to predict the future. All I can guarantee you is, with one thing for absolute certainty, the exact number that we have for a fiscal note is not the number that's going to materialize.
That's understandable.
What they tried to do, as I understand it, through an actuarially sound methodology, is they took past turnovers, rehirings, even in this time, and then projected that into the future. And as an employer of over 57,000 state workers, we have turnover. We just have not added to the aggregate number of state workers. It doesn't mean we're not hiring new employees that work for the state of Missouri.
That my question being that the assumption, and I haven't seen the fiscal note, far the savings over a, in your fiscal notes over a 10-year period?
With Mickey, I think Mickey does a 3-year fiscal note
in
where that is. So, and Rhonda's getting that information. The problem is we really don't have all of that locked in. We have what we did last year, which you've received all of those savings, and it's tantamount to the same amount. If you want to look at the benefit plan changes that we've done, and this is in that latest white paper.
I'm just trying to go over a overall assumption that this in the other bill, we all have different opinions. I have a fiscal note. Okay, for the first year with...
Yeah, why don't you get me a copy of that as well?
The first year, the net effect of GR is $3.1 million. The second year,
I think you're just looking at the top page. You're going to have to read the other pages in there. That's the top page of the way Mickey does his fiscal notes, and I don't agree with everything Mickey does. But the way that Mickey does his fiscal notes is the top page is what's allocated out of GR. You're going to have to read deeper as well, where you'll find the savings with the investment board, and you'll also find the scoring outside of the 3-year mark.
Okay, with this current fiscal note, you're offline. Here, I'll get further outside.
Yeah, so you played that draw in there.
Thanks to the senator from Jefferson, I have lost my train of thought as I get older. I celebrated my birthday last week.
You were talking about the fiscal debt.
I lose track. I don't know if things are setting in. 47 years young.
Okay, now this takes into effect January?
January 1, 2011.
11. What did the House have?
February 1, 2011.
Why was there a difference there?
You want my personal opinion?
I just found this out
right.
by asking you.
Right. My personal opinion is they wanted to exempt the future General Assemblies and future individuals. That's why an amendment was offered to make the General Assembly go back to January 1, 2011, future elected members of the General Assembly. But I don't. I don't.
What was truly agreed? Was it February 1?
It was February for the House on everyone except for the amendment that said General Assembly members are going to go back to January.
So their version is General Assembly is January, every other state employee is February.
That's my understanding of their version. Correct.
Okay. Let's go through the investment board because that was not in the House version?
It was not in the House version.
Is that basically the only differences?
No, the biggest difference is, if I could, and you have a spreadsheet I put on your desk.
You can go ahead and educate me and educate
sure.
the members.
Sure. If you look, we've distributed a comparison of perfected House Committee substitute for House Bill 1 and Senate Bill 1. So there's this little spreadsheet that looks like this that we've circulated and put on your desk.
I have it.
And to the left is everything that the House had. To the right is where the Senate is at. The largest differences, if you want to look on, really start coming to fold on page 3. The House came up with the idea, instead of a retirement age of 67, which is the same age you have to be for Social Security, the House dropped it down to 65. Instead of a rule of 90, which is where we were on the Senate, which is you can retire with full benefits looking at your age and length of service, the House dropped it down to a rule of 84.
Currently, what is it?
Rule of 80.
Okay.
With a minimum retirement age of 48.
Okay.
Under both the House and the Senate version,
you've
a minimum retirement age of 55,
okay.
Even where you hit it.
What was the reasoning for 84?
It seemed like I don't know.
Okay.
They
all right, continue.
Then the other area is in the Senate version, it's a 10-year vestiture. In the House version, it's a 5-year vestiture.
And the bill that you passed out this year from the Senate was a 10-year vestiture?
Correct.
Okay.
And then the investment board. The Senate version has the investment board in it. The House version does not.
Is that pretty much the
That's the pretty much big picture where it is. The House added provisions that we're talking with the auditor's office about. Remember 714, the original purpose was is that loggers sued the state auditor saying that you can't come in and audit our books. Well, because within the governor's call, it specifically says, I don't want you to address teachers and loggers. I did not add the auditor's provisions in there that would affect teachers and loggers. The House added those. So
but
I took those out.
Do you have the auditors for Mosiers and MPERS?
We do not have that at this time.
It's not in there at all.
It's not in there at all because I believe, and we're trying to get clarifications, that it would be beyond the call because it's not part of the call. And the last thing I want to do is take my own bill that I totally agree with, put it in this, and somehow jeopardize the bill.
I would not think you would disagree with your own legislation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's just I'm looking at a very
that
narrow
call. That would be
call.
A new date
yeah,
in the
yeah.
Senate.
I'm looking at a very narrow call, and I don't want to do anything that would jeopardize the legislation by making it beyond the constitutional limits of the call.
Let's go over the investment board now.
Okay.
We went over this before when you brought it up.
Sure.
To refresh, I hope the leaders are not upset. This is not a filibustering measure.
No, no. I think it's good educational. I'm glad you're doing
it. I didn't think you would want to go through this process with just a motion made and
voted upon. Okay, let's go through the investment board is being created, and the members, again, the two executive directors of Mosiers and Empers, the OA commissioner, four members appointed by the governor, who shall not be state employees, from a list of eight persons recommended by Mosiers and Empers executive directors. The governor will have the right to reject any and all persons recommended by the executive directors or board and shall submit additional names to the governor for such consideration. Is there anything in here to make sure the governor appoints people that these
you
do not stay vacant?
Ryan, the guy that works in my office. I'm sorry,
is there
Senator,
anything,
I apologize.
Is there anything in here that makes sure the governor appoints? Because at times there are vacancies and they lapse. And possibly to make sure that there is the forced issue of making appointments, is that in here at all?
No, it's not. I mean, listen, the governor has been heavily involved in this legislation and has had their input in this legislation. I take the governor at his word and his staff's word that it's going to move forward if we can get this put in legislation.
That's not my issue.
Okay.
My issue is once this governor someday is gone, there'll be a new governor.
Sure.
Why should not, do they have to be approved by the Senate?
Yes.
Why should not there be a forced issue that an appointment is made that people just don't continue on boards, that when terms are expired, they have to come through this Senate body again?
Well, I hear you, but we don't do it anywhere else. We don't do it for the highways. We don't do it for any other board that's out there. I mean,
limits, but the term limits aren't in effect.
Say again?
You have term limits, but they don't go into effect unless...
Yeah, the same as here. You serve until your individual is confirmed to replace you. I mean, you have term limits on highways. You have term limits on conservation, two very important, very powerful boards. You serve until your replacement is either named when we're out of session or if you're appointed... until you're confirmed, if
that's
made in session.
Well, think about it, that people can serve on boards that were never confirmed.
No, they can't. Because if you have a recess appointment and you are not confirmed within the first 30 days, you are barred for life from serving in that capacity.
I understand that.
Right.
But if you don't change the appointment, they just sit and serve until the governor reappoints.
I totally agree.
So,
I totally
in
agree.
Essence, there's people that have a six-year term, that their term expires, they continue to serve, and even though there's an expiration of that, if they don't get reappointed, they continue to serve, and the Senate does not have any authority.
And the same with the highway department, the same with conservation, the same with every other board.
One brick at a time.
Yeah, all right. I hear you, but I mean, I think we're getting into, in my opinion, a level of statutory specificity that is not necessary. I mean, at some point, you know, whether it's the relations between the Senate and the House, the relations between the Senate and the governor, there's got to be a meeting of looking an individual in the eye, shaking your hands, and moving forward. I mean, you just can't legislate every possible conceivable. I mean, you think we've got a large volume of statute books now. I mean, Senator, it would quadruple in size.
My issue being with this investment board is my take is different from your take after serving on the same as a trustee for the last 6 years. Is serving on Mosiers for the first 6 years was a pretty much a check. They were making money sometimes up to 18%. Then all of a sudden we lose. Then people start questioning. Then I start reading more and educating more. And the financial industry, as we know it, has no checks and balances. What we've seen transpire at the federal level is basically inflated actuarial studies on investments. I'm not talking about Moser's, but the financial market had no checks and balances. So if we're going to create an investment board, I want them to have some checks and balances.
And I think there are. There's a Senate confirmation process that's associated with it. There's a gubernatorial appointment that's associated with it. And with all due respect, I would blame the politicians in Washington, D.C. that created Fetty and Fannie Mac and forced many of the markets to do the craziness that they did. We have laws against fraud. If you choose not to enforce those, we have laws against what happened in the Gulf. If we choose not to enforce those, it doesn't mean we need to run out and create new laws. It means we need to enforce the laws that are already on the book. It seems no one, whenever a crisis occurs, in my opinion, Senator, that they ever look back and say, did we follow the laws we already have? The politicians quickly move forward and say, we need to pass a whole bunch of other laws. Well, I don't think we need to pass a whole bunch of other laws. And I would respectfully disagree with your characterization that it was the fact that there was no oversight that was there in the statutes. We chose not to enforce it. It was there. There are checks and balances that are there. But whether it's because of campaign contributions to politicians, wink, wink, nod, nods, we didn't do it as a government.
The bottom line is there's a lot of people that lost a lot of money that put their trust in the people. Now,
and the shame of it is they don't have a lawsuit against the federal government.
I'm trying to make sure.
Right.
People, you're blowing it up more than what I'm trying. I'm just trying to make sure people that we're creating a new investment board have to sit in front of 34 senators and say, I have no conflicts. This is my background. This is my history. And they say yes. I mean, the power of the Senate in approving appointments should be taken very seriously, especially on something like this.
Absolutely.
People can serve on these without being reappointed. And I want to, what I'm trying to state is, if you do not appoint a replacement, you serve on that until whenever. That's all I'm saying is,
yeah, I should, I hear you.
You and I.
But
you,
I don't,
and
I, yeah.
You and I, and I'm saying that right, my English teacher will be proud of me, you and I instead of me and you. You and I have to get reappointed every 4 years. We have to get reappointed by going to the voters. Now these people that sit on a new investment board, why shouldn't they have to, those appointments have to be taken up within 60 days of their expiration? What's the big issue with that?
Well, we don't do it anywhere else. We may not be in session during that time frame.
Well, can't we put until the Senate meets so that they can confirm?
That's what we do right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens already. Okay? Now, if a governor does not want to make an appointment, he is in essence making that appointment to an individual that has already been confirmed.
That takes away the confirmation process.
No, because it's already been confirmed individually.
I understand that.
Right.
What I'm saying is that person hasn't been confirmed with me sitting as a senator, and then I'm here voting for appropriations to Moser's board, and this investment board that is being created, I should have some input as well if I'm responsible. I don't see what the big holdup is.
I don't know how you do it. I mean, if you've got an amendment.
I'm sure there'll be other inquiries. And
yeah,
if you've
got an amendment, I'd be happy to talk to you. But I don't know how this body can force. I don't know how this body can force the governor to make an appointment. I don't know how you do that. I mean, no different than we had the long discussion of, we don't have the power to force the governor to do a proclamation for the Girl Scouts. I don't know how you force, as the General Assembly, the governor to do something. But if you have an amendment, I'd be happy to talk to you.
Let's go this avenue to educate the members.
Sure.
How does the board work?
How does what board work?
The new investment board.
The new investment board would have a fiduciary obligation, a responsibility to maximize investment returns and minimize investment losses. It only becomes created if an affirmative vote of Mosiers and an affirmative vote of Emperors vest their investment functions in it. So in essence, Mosiers and Emperors would take a vote to say, we want this investment board to be quickened and created to then be responsible for our investments, realizing that if we maximize investment returns and minimize investment losses, that we would be in a position then to save taxpayer dollars and consolidate savings from going to two investment functions, one at Emperor's, one at Mosier's, to one.
We are in this dealing with just Emperors and Mosiers.
Correct.
We're not allowing, and I'm just using it because it's in my district, the Florissant Valley Fire Protection District,
correct,
to say, inspire my investor of my little local pension, I want to use the state investment. That's not in here.
No, you asked me to talk to Ron Gladney. I talked to Ron Gladney, and we took Ron Gladney's language that he came up to carve those up.
Everyone having the opportunity. I'm asking.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. There's an opt-in. He specifically excluded. Okay, so we understand. He specifically excluded,
I State and the St. Louis teachers.
Right, right.
They, and I understand.
Right.
Everyone said, and we also can talk about who you talked about earlier in the year. We don't need to bring up names, but the teachers aren't in it, but it keeps being brought up that this is the crack in the door. I know that's not in there.
Sure.
But the one selling point you always had was you can opt in. Now, what I talked to you about took that option totally out.
No, you can still opt in as another municipality. We carved out the individuals that you wanted carved out.
Okay, I'm using Florissant, it's in my district, Florissant Valley Fire Protection District. When I first came into the Missouri Senate, my first job sitting on the joint board, I sat there and two of the fire districts in my senatorial district were vested at like 50%, one was 45%. Mm-hmm. First thing I do is I contact the directors. I says, you people have a problem. Well, right away, the firefighters thought I was trying to attack their pension system. I was like, no, I'm trying to make sure before they give you increased value in your pension that there's money in there for the pension.
Right.
If they want to fire, use a different name, Brown. I hope there isn't a Brown investment brokerage house that I'm using as an example. They want to fire them for not participating. Can they opt in to use this investment board?
Yes.
But the investment board has to be created.
Correct. Emperors and Mosiers
are the only ones that can create it.
Right.
So if it's not created, there isn't an investment board.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Now, will the board create their own employment, or we don't micromanage that?
Correct. The board will hire and fire people, if you'll give that to Ryan.
Can Mosiers opt out their trustees because as trustees change, can they opt out?
No. Once you vest and once you start this, it's just like loggers. Once a municipality chooses to participate in loggers, you can't get back out because you can't unwind where your plan was invested and where it isn't invested.
So a current Board of Trustees of Mosiers will commit future trustees?
Just like they do right now. Just like you and I, by voting, we have bound into certain long-term limited partnership agreements future Mosiers boards for investment purposes.
Yeah.
We've actually bound the board to one that has about $24 million for almost 15 years. You and I have.
Okay, once created, you cannot kind of like
irrevocable. Think of it like an irrevocable
Like a healthy marriage, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the eyes of the Pope.
In the eyes of the Pope. Can you enlighten any more about the investment board?
The whole idea, and I appreciate the opportunity in this discussion, Senator, because I want people to understand, and I talked about this during the regular session when we passed this identical language twice, that I got a phone call from the senator from Stoddard, and the senator from Stoddard told me that it was his understanding that the senator from Jasper was going to retire or resign as the budget chair, and that the senator from Stoddard was going to be named the budget chair or the appropriations chair. He then said, we're looking at some serious issues as it relates to the stability of our state budget. And where would you look within retirement issues for savings? And I said, well, we have a $2.2 billion state payroll. Of that, 58% infringes. So you take another 58% and add it on top of the $2.2 billion state payroll. Of that, roughly 63% of the 58 infringes is healthcare, 37% is pensions. So looking isolated at pensions, we made what I think are common sense reforms to current conditions on the benefit side. Now then we shift to the investment board, which is banked and budgeted half of the savings of the retirement package that we brought forward. And the whole idea within the investment board is to say the Missouri taxpayers have already created this entity over here that is the best investors in the entire country. And it's not me that's saying that, it's the awards that have been generated. So the Missouri taxpayers have already built this wonderful investment team, but we're only utilizing it in one area for the benefit of the taxpayers. We then look at emperors. And it's not anyone's fault, but emperors have a vested a vestigere of below 50% and is in what anyone would call a stressed retirement system environment. And knowing fully well that the only ways in which our current retirement systems are funded is through investment gains and taxpayer contributions, the thought process was not only to limit benefits and reform benefits, whatever word you want to use, but also to maximize that asset that the taxpayers have already paid for to the benefit of the taxpayers. So you create this independent investment board that has historically received 140 basis points. That's 1.4% more than what Emperors has done. And that's not blaming Emperors. Emperors has two investment people. You know the investment staff and individuals that have been created at Mosers. So the idea is, do you spend the millions of dollars to build at Emperors what the taxpayers have already spent and built at Mosers? Or do you look at a way in which you say, is there any way we can take what we've already built and paid for and share it with the rest of state government to the benefit of the state taxpayers? And that's where we came through the process of creating an independent public investment board that has the sole fiduciary obligation of maximizing investment returns and minimizing investment losses to the benefit of our two taxpayer-funded pension systems, Mosers and Emperors. Then the silver lining. The silver lining in that equation is that municipalities like Springfield, municipalities like St. Louis Police and Fire, municipalities like St. Louis County Police and Fire have said, you know what? We would like to put our money where we get the biggest return for it. And for whatever reason, Mosers is able to do a better job than we are. So is there any way you can also have it where we might be able, if it makes financial sense to us and financial sense to the state, leverage those higher returns for more dramatic savings to the taxpayers? And that's where we came in with the opt-in for municipalities that wanted to be able to opt-in. And that's where we came up with the exclusion of those funds that, for whatever reason, would just as soon make less money with their money than what is going on right now. And I'm fine with that, and that's why we put those exclusions in. But the whole idea and the whole benefit of this is that it will save taxpayer dollars.
On the summary, when we're talking about the makeup of the board.
Are you on the chart comparison?
Yeah, page five.
Page five, yes, sir.
Board shall consist of 7 members. 4 members appointed by the governor shall not be state employees. Then you go to the summary on page 6.
Yep.
Board shall set compensation for necessary travel expenses for board employees. Such employees shall be both state employees and members of Mosiers. So are we saying a board member can be a state employee?
No. The board can't hire a board member.
Here, go down a few more. Any board members who are also state employees shall not suffer loss in regular compensation associated with performance of board duties.
That's the director of Emperors and the director of Mosiers and the OA commissioner, not the 4 that are confirmed by the Senate.
Okay. All right, the one last thing I want to mention, getting back to where we started with this inquiry about, I say reduction, you say reform. Reduction due to the fact that I'm actually a member of a union. I don't know if you're familiar with
that. I had no idea, Senator.
Recently, in our industry, we got about 45% unemployment. So at the contract we just approved in June, we took a pay cut, and our benefits are on percentage of pay. So with that comes a pension cut, a health and welfare, plus we also, to offset the increased cost, did our copay on our health and welfare, increase that every time you go to a doctor's visit. Similar to what Consolidated is doing, similar to what you are doing. But when we sit here and talk about the state employees and how much they're making, I do want to make sure everyone's aware the average monthly benefit for 32,000 retired state employees, average monthly benefit is $1,220. Right now, if you do retire before you're Medicare eligible, and let's say you're a retiree and a spouse, but you retired at that so-called 55, you don't get Medicare till you're 65, so that's 10 years, you're paying Consolidated. You're roughly paying about $800 a month in costs to get health insurance. So just using that as an example, that leaves $420 a month a state employee is receiving when they retire at 55, dealing with the average payout of $1,220. So I want to make sure that there is not an assumption that these state employees, when they're leaving at 55, are backing up a Brinks truck to the Truman Building or to Central Bank and going away, that even though we offer them, that there is not this high payout that you might assume. What you have is a group with a board and an investment of Mosiers run efficiently that's 85% funded, and the dealing with the reduction is to try in the future, because we know we are going to have financial constraints, is to lower the payout of the state and possibly save positions of other state employees with the amount of revenues coming in continuing to decrease. So that is my definition of reduction compared to your definition of
fair
reform.
Enough. Fair enough.
Thank you.
You vote Democrat, I vote Republican.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your honor, motion is Senator from
tape. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you seek recognition? Senator from Cape.
Cape. I yield.
You yield, Senator?
I yield.
Senator, you may proceed.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator, I had one concern about this, and I do recognize that we passed it out. I'm looking at several of your amendments here. I'm not sure if you're going to...
Sure.
Are you planning to offer these?
I think they are on the Senate bill, if you look at
it. Yes, they are.
So we've got the Senate bill that's out there where we're on the House bill right now.
Now, but you do have one.
I do have one on the House bill, and at this time, I'm not going to offer that.
You are not going to offer that one?
Correct.
And this has to do with the Highway Patrol.
Yeah, it has to do with the Highway Patrol, but before we actually perfect the Senate Committee substitute, so you know it's my intention, I think I've got some of the Highway Patrol guys out there. I just have a couple questions about this before we actually do that, so I'm going to ask to stand at ease whenever we get a chance to see if I actually am going to offer this amendment or not.
Okay, well, let me, first of all, I'm not sure if this is correct. There's a special caveat here for the Highway Patrol, if I remember correctly.
Let me explain that. It's not a special caveat. The Highway Patrol are the only state workers that we have with a minimum retirement age of 60.
Okay.
We have in state statute a requirement because we have deemed it public policy that we don't want any Highway Patrol officers working past age 60.
Okay.
So just like in our Constitution, it says we don't want any judges working past the age of 70.
All right.
For whatever reason, the General Assembly in one and the citizens in the other put those mandatory retirement age. What the provisions for the Highway Patrol that are in this bill follow that logic. I can't have a retirement age of 67 for highway patrols when we have in statute a mandatory retirement age of 60.
Okay.
So that's where the changes between the highway patrol and the other state workers are.
Okay.
And I would point out that mandatory retirement age in lawsuits that we've had brought before the state is the only rational basis that the courts have given us as a way to treat different state workers differently than other state workers.
All right. Now, we were looking at still maintaining the age of 60.
Correct.
And the proposal, and that's with 10 years of service.
For Highway Patrol,
That's what I'm looking at, only Highway Patrol.
Yes.
60 or 55 with 10 years of service. Okay. That would put that then actually at 65. That would be
Say again?
That would be at 65 then. If we go to what your proposal is, age 60 or age 55 with 10 years of service.
No.
That's what
you're looking at.
Am I looking at the right chart here?
What page are you on?
I'm on page 3 of the chart.
Okay.
Okay,
what it is a mandatory retirement age of 60
with
a new minimum, and this is under the 90 and out provision, that at a minimum age, you can retire at 55 with full benefits as long as you have 10 years vestiture.
10 years of service, okay.
Right.
Now.
So that's under the rule of 90.
Okay.
That we've hybrid for the Highway Patrol.
All right, okay. Now, for
and that's what this amendment that I'm trying to see if I want to offer better wordsmiths that.
Okay.
Because so I don't know if I need to offer it or not.
It's a bit confusing.
Right.
So that's
I understand the way that they made this chart, but you need to read the date. What we're basically changing is under the rule of 80, you had a minimum retirement age of 48. So if your age and your length of service added up to 80, and you were at least 48 years of age, you could retire with full benefits.
Right.
Under the rule of 90, which is contemplated in the Senate version of the bill, it is your age and your length of service with a minimum age of 55.
Right.
So
That's why you see this age 55 sprinkled through here, is because that's the new minimum age under a rule of 90.
Okay, I know we had talked about that with other other areas, taking into account that people could come and start working at 18 or 19,
sure.
And at that point they would be actually ready to retire.
Right.
And so that's given the number of years that they have served.
Absolutely.
So, okay, the second concern that I had to do with the vested.
Sure.
We're moving from 5 to 10.
Sure.
That seems like an awful long time for me, and I will say that.
Sure.
5 years, I guess, is probably the industry average. Would you agree with that? Would you say that that's kind of a normal five-year vested? What would you think it, what is it now?
Are you talking other public pension funds?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
I'm sorry.
Five to seven, I think, is probably the majority would fall in that category.
Okay.
I would concede to you that a 10-year is on the upper end
of
most pension funds, but the trade-off, Senator, so that we take this in all context, is 4% is on the very, very low end for employee contributions. So when I was looking at a mixture between vestige and contribution, we took the low end on the contribution and the high end on the vestiger. And the reason, the rationale, the logic, if you would, that we reached for doing that is because if you look at the white paper, I've given you some demographic data that will show you on the second page of what our employee workforce is. And the average service at retirement for a state worker is 23 years of age, or 23 years of service. So the question became, where would we, quite honestly, for the vast majority of state workers, have a larger impact? Should we have an 8% contribution rate, which would be more on average, 6 to 8% for employment, public pension systems? Or should we have a 10-year vestiger? And it seemed to me, looking at the demographic changes, that the less harm, statistically speaking, on average, would be to have the longer vestiger and the smaller employee contribution. And that's the trade-off that we made.
How much money do we have? How much money do we save? And we're talking general
sure.
employees, not highway patrol, none of the judiciary, none of that. How much money do we save? I'm looking at from 5 to 10.
Right.
Because I'm trying to figure out if
and that's
if the
what we're trying
average,
to get.
If the industry average is between 5 and 7.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out how we can kind of come to some kind of compromise on that. 10 years just seems like an awful long time. I don't know if we need to.
Well, 10 years is not an awful long time.
When you're coming from five, Senator.
Well, this is new hires. It's not old hires.
I understand when you're coming from 5 to 10, and then we don't. I mean, our salaries are not the best in the world. We know that, and that was a lot of why we had. The retirement benefits that we did have because of what's considered, our
low
scale.
We're trying to get that. The problem is that the House passed a bill that it didn't have a fiscal note generated on and where that's against. And we're trying to play catch up between the differences on each individual category of scoring and savings. And I think Rhonda has been working on that to be able to tell us how much of the overall savings in this bill is attributable to the 10 years?
Just to the 10 years.
Is attributable to the 4%? Is attributable to going to 67? That's the same question that the senator from the 13th asked that we're trying to get to. Now, I've got percentages, but percentages aren't dollars.
Well, no, they're
not. And I think what you're wanting is dollars, not percentagers.
Right. I really want to look at that because I'm on GAFO, asked the question there, could not get a response there either. And so that's why I'm asking you. I need a dollar figure.
Sure. And we're trying to get the actuaries to give us that number, but the actuaries have got it in percentages instead of numbers. So we're trying to do some math to take the percentages that the actuaries that certified the numbers take their percentages and translate that into real dollars.
Okay, well, I can wait for that,
yeah,
but
sure.
I know that everything was kind of cobbled together as one and did not have that that section out there. So I will end my inquiry there in hopes that I can get that kind of information from you or Rhonda or whomever is putting that together.
Sure.
Thank you very much,
Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
We're on the motion of the Senator from Cape. Does any other Senator wish to speak on that motion? The Senator from the 5th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
The maker of the bill.
Senator from Cape, do you yield? He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator. Just a quick follow-up from some of the concerns I raised in the committee yesterday, similar to what the Senator from the 15th was speaking about, which you did kind of allay my concerns about that. One of them was the 10 years.
Sure.
Because of the pattern of living these days, if we hire someone today, say at 30 years old, they could potentially work to 53, because we're saying the average employee stays 23 years. So a 20-year-old could stay to the age of 53. My concern became an older worker, a 45-year-old or a 50-year-old, who would stay until 73, a 50-year-old. They wouldn't be vested until 60 years old. That's a long time.
If they started working at 50. But they couldn't retire till they're 67.
Absolutely. Okay, I understand that. So my concern, of course, is the length of the 10 years. I know there's instability in the stock market, which kind of precipitated this whole crisis that we have. We have, I don't know how many COLAs we could get in the next 10 years, how many increases in state salary, because we are kind of a low-paid state. The potential of increasing salary would maybe help with recruitment and retention of workers. We talked about their length of service. If they come in, they may stay 10 years, they may not, and they've invested a lot of blood, sweat, tears, and time, and which we had that discussion yesterday.
Sure.
The potential of us changing this, Senator, and this is just for discussion, you can't predict the future, neither can I, but should the stock market really begin to stabilize and increase in its value, the likelihood of Missouri coming back and revisiting this, say, within the next 4 to 8 years, is that a potential? Most of us will all be gone.
Right. Any General Assembly can do that. If a future General Assembly says, you know what, that General Assembly got it wrong and we need to beef up our retirement packages, then we'll beef them up. And that General Assembly can try to find the costs that are associated with it. But know this, Senator, I mean, the taxpayers that are paying for all of this, okay? I hear you. Mm-hmm. I understand and appreciate your concerns for the state workers that are there. Mm-hmm. But I think an eye also has to be focused on the people that are paying for all of this.
Yes.
All right? If you talk about the actual average taxpayer, they don't have a defined benefit plan. They don't have a guaranteed pension. They probably don't even have a 401k or a defined contribution plan. If you talk about the private sector, they don't have a period to vest in, the people that are paying the taxes, and they don't have this idea that they're going to get to retire at 67. You know, most of the small business owners, I mean, we got a guy that makes cheesecakes that's 84 years old, still making cheesecakes in Cape at his own place. You know, I mean, those small business owners that pay the taxes, that employ people, are still working.
And we pay taxes too, Senator, so I answer this question.
Absolutely.
For me. What percentage, do we know what percentage of the American workers actually have a retirement pension plan? Are there any in any of our
documents? I would say it's very, very small. A guaranteed defined benefit pension plan. They are in the vast minority of individuals in America.
Pension plans in general.
I mean, there's a big difference between a pension and a defined contribution 401k.
Well, I understand that, but are you saying...
No, I think between a 401k and a pension, knowing that there are radical differences between the two, that the vast majority of the American workers have one or the other. Or let me throw this in to say the third category, there are individuals like myself that are self-employed that contribute to what's called a simple plan, a simple IRA, an individual retirement account that's out there. So, which I contribute to and I create myself.
Right.
And as a small business owner, you know, at my law, I pay the employer's tax
and the employees' tax.
Right, absolutely, and it is a burden. Well, that's a good segue into my next concern, and I didn't bring this up yesterday for the sake of time, but there's been discussion that this retirement, or this pension plan change that we are considering is a direct or an indirect offset for the dollars that would be expended in the House Bill 2 in the Manufacturing Act.
I'm sorry. I missed that. I got an email that came in, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Okay, here's my second question.
Okay.
My second question is that the dollars that the state would save in making this change in the pension plan could be an indirect or direct offset to the dollars that are expended in House Bill 2 if, you know,
I don't buy into that. I don't buy into that logic. I don't know where that was created. I look at this as the governor believes that there are a majority of individuals that want to provide an economic development incentive to save Ford Motor Company jobs. Mm-hmm. All right? That in and of itself, to some individuals, makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right? The whole idea that we've heard about tax credits all along is that they pay for themselves.
That's what
you know, that's why they say it makes good sense to go ahead and do this. Mm-hmm. So I don't buy into the argument that the pension reforms or the pension reductions or whatever you want to call them are to go ahead and quote unquote pay for the Ford bill, even though we're supposed to not call it the Ford bill. You know, I don't find that to be the algebraic equation that's going on. I believe we need to make the pension reductions, the pension reforms, the pension savings in and of itself on an ongoing basis for really two reasons.
Okay.
The first reason is because it brings in line with what's going on in the private sector and outside of state government.
True.
The federal government raised the Social Security retirement age to 67. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's where the year 67 came from.
Right.
And so because our retirement system was designed to be a supplement to Social Security,
yes,
that even though with the figures that the senator from the 13th laid out, you will receive, once you've vested and retired in the state of Missouri, 75% of your salary. And it's your highest 36 months.
Right.
So to get 75% of your highest 36 salary, then in supplement with Social Security, is pretty doggone good and pretty doggone generous. Now, you're still going to get that. We are not talking about paring down the actual dollar figure of your retirement.
Right.
We're talking about when you can start receiving it.
Right, absolutely.
Where we have some state workers out there that started receiving that pretty doggone good retirement plan at 48 years of age, we're now going to say, hey, listen, you got to be 55. Come on. Mm-hmm. Look at the empirical life table studies.
True.
People are living longer. You know, come on. You can work until you're 55 years of age under a rule of 90 and out.
Right.
And as it relates to those that may not qualify under a rule of 90 and out, because they don't have the longevity, we're going to say, just like in Social Security, you've got to be 67 to get Social Security, full benefits.
Right.
You now, in order to get your full benefits for the retirement,
got
to be 67. But we're not reducing. It's still 75% of your highest 36.
Right.
That is still what you're going to receive as a retirement stipend.
One last question. Just looking at your comparison chart, just have a quick question about the auditing.
Sure.
When you look at the first part of it, you name the public school retirement system, but it doesn't say specifically St. Louis and Kansas City. Are they in the? Are
That's
they in
the
that
house.
As well?
That's the.
No, this
no.
is the compare. Yeah, that was the House.
Okay.
And there were no provisions for that in the Senate bill.
Right.
Okay.
That was my original bill, 714.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of the call that the governor has made, and it doesn't include granting the auditor the power to do audits on all of those systems, I have removed that and still open if the, if, you know, I'm not calling on the governor to expand the call, but right now, that topic of granting the auditor power to go into loggers and all of the, it's not within the call. So I took it out. I don't know why the House put it in, but I think it's beyond the call.
Okay.
So I don't want to do something that puts in jeopardy the legislation that is within the call because we wanted to add something that's outside of the call.
I got that. Okay, thank you.
So that's why I took that out.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
We're on the motion of the senator from CAPE. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 4th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire from the senator from the 27th.
Senator from CAPE, you yield.
I yield.
You yield, Senator. You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I, pursuant to our discussion yesterday, I'm sure. Thinking about putting an amendment on this. Are you, is it your intention to stand at ease?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go talk to them about the amendment that I have distributed and see if I can get final clarification on all of that. So I'm going to ask that we stand at ease at some point when we're able to talk about that. I think that the senator from the 13th may have an amendment as it deals with forcing the governor to appoint. I don't know. But I think from the discussions we've had, and I think the senator from the 14th had some concerns or talks about the vestiture. So at some point, we're going to stand at ease to talk about all of that.
Okay.
So.
Then I can wait till we come back.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you want to go now, I mean, I'd just soon get it out of the way.
All right. Well.
Okay.
Yesterday we had spoken about expanding the conflicts language for the staff.
Sure.
And that's my amendment.
Okay. Do you have it drafted up?
I have it drafted up.
And where it is? Okay. Well, let's stand at ease and we'll see if we can roll all of those things in and when it's appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We're on the motion of the senator from CAPE. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask unanimous consent of the body to stand at ease.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will stand at ease.
Thanks.
Could you go to the order of business of announce? No? We have to. What's that? Okay, Senator, could you lay this over?
Senator from CAPE, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Did you put this bill on the informal calendar?
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from St. Francis, what
Mr.
purpose
President,
do you
can
seek
we go to the order of business of announcements?
On the order of business of announcements.
Would Senator, you recognize me for announcements?
Senator from St. Francis.
Here's what's happening. There's a couple things that we need to run by the second floor, look at these amendments and see if they need to be done. In the meantime, JCAR needs to meet. So rather than just standing at ease, I'd like to stand in recess for one half an hour so they can go ahead and have their meeting while they're getting all these details worked out. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
On the order of business of announcements. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for you. I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:40 today.
You heard the motion of the Senator from St. Francis. All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will be in recess until 1:40.